I'm Janitara Begum, and I work in Operation Unite, and you're tuned to 90.7 FM WGXC. ACRA.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the Office of the Governor and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the Greene County Cultural Fund, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC monthly supporters, whose generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support. Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Dave King and Frank Tartaglione in Philmont, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hi, Laura Kuhn here, director of the John Cage Trust, bringing you a deep dive into the intriguing life and work of Renaissance man John Cage, celebrated composer, poet, philosopher, chess pupil of Marcel Duchamp, life partner of Merce Cunningham, macrobiotic chef, exponent of Zen, visual artist, and avid and pioneering mycologist. Tune in to All Things Cage, 7 p.m. Saturdays beginning January 2nd, for conversations with cage experts and enthusiasts from around the world.
Singularity Radio Program, broadcasting live from the Catskill Makers Syndicate's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, because believe me, folks, we are ready to blast off of this rock. How is everybody doing tonight? Ben, what's up?
Doing well.
Cool.
To his left, because we passed the...
I'm Cody.
On the left-hand side. What's up? To his left is...
Greg Anton. Good evening.
And to his left is...
Ditto. I... tell you how I was doing, but I can't seem to get out of this black hole to send you a message.
And we're going to be talking all about that in a second, because
that's what we were talking about before.
Yeah, you're basically tuning into our little clubhouse, and we have conversations going that we're just letting you be privy to. And then we got our sound guy, Brian. How you doing?
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
He is busy at the main board because we have our own little mini radio station right here. Anybody got anything on their chest they need to get off at the moment? Floor is open.
No, let's get into
quantum foam.
Yeah.
Cody, what were you talking
quantum
about?
Quantum foam. Well,
what kind of foam? Is this the foam that traps like quantum farts?
Or yeah, exactly.
Like, okay.
No, it's the froth on the top of your quantum beer.
Okay.
No.
Keep going.
We were talking about how a singularity is a mathematical concept, and the black hole is the visible sort of physical effect that we see in reality when one of those manifests. And it's just kind of a place where... You can explain it, Greg, about things being undefined there.
Well, it brings up this concept that has come about with Hurricane Beryl, and that is the cone of uncertainty. So, you know, a lot of these mathematical shapes are conical. The cone of uncertainty, the light cone.
Mm.
I would assume that a singularity is conical. if there exists meth at that level?
I was going to say, it would be undefined. It would be something.
Well, the space, maybe if you visualize space-time around the singularity, it would resemble something conical.
Well, space-time around any particle is conical, because you're just tracing its possibilities of where it could ever end up.
But we're getting really far away from the point. Point is that around this place, it's undefined. The mathematics that we use to describe the universe.
So it's a fuzzy cone.
And I suggested to you, Joe, that just go inside. Go inside the undefined space.
Okay, so first of all, we need a singularity big enough for me to avoid spaghettification. Because I hear that's painful. And I would like to avoid it.
I don't know. Maybe it's not painful. Well, maybe you wouldn't feel it because you're simply existing along that metric.
You would end up bifurcating.
This is the Singularity Radio Show. And Joe knows what a singularity is. So since it's a thing that he knows, he could probably define it. But I don't think it's a cone. No, it's a sphere. And that's what we see in the three-dimensional space. In the four-dimensional space, it gets a little more complicated.
Singularity's interface with our reality is inevitably a sphere or a spheroid because black holes rotate. So, yes, that's the event horizon. It's going to be shaped like that. But what's inside of it is what we would have to go inside to find out.
Now, if you look at the picture of a black hole as routinely shown, it doesn't look like a sphere. It looks like it's wearing a bonnet. It has this light that's in a curvilinear form on top of the sphere.
Accretion disk.
No, it's not an accretion disk.
No?
Exactly. The reason you see it on top of the black hole from any angle, no matter where you're looking at it in the galaxy, you see the same image, and that is the light that's been bent around from the back side.
Oh, okay.
So what this shows is a gravitational lens effect that a black hole is useful for. It can see very close to itself, or it can project the light very close to itself back to the observer. And
At what kind of distance?
Very
right
close.
Right up to the event horizon.
No, I meant from the black hole to the observer.
Well, we're a million light years away, so
galactic length.
We would see it at any distance. So the telescope that I just submitted to NASA, I think it was Monday, is a telescope that turns off a star. So you can be far, far away from a star, but you put your thumb over it, and then you see light that's faint. And the faint light that is coming from around the gravitational lens at the star acts, it's not a singularity or event horizon, but it's still a whole lot of gravity, is the exoplanet on the other side. So you can see exoplanets on the other side of a star if you can turn the star off.
And you're talking like an exoplanet in rotation around, in orbit around that star.
That's right. And you'll see it in very fine detail.
So,
because it's like putting it in under a microscope.
I was just going to say, instead of a telescope, it's like a galactic microscope.
It's a stellar microscope.
That's awesome.
Very cool idea.
So, yeah, I had this idea, and I ran it by NASA, and I started talking to a guy that is at the Jet Propulsion Lab in UCLA, and he started to correspond, and he said, this is a really bright idea. Can you actually turn the star off? And the way I do it is I use two telescopes, and they're on rails, so they're like your eyes. But if you could pull your eyes out of their sockets and move them to the length of your arms, you could do 3D at the distance that the outstretched arms would allow. And that turns out to be quite a long distance. And then if you apply the principles of optics that I use, which are interferometry. Interferometry is where the light interferes with itself and creates alternate black and white lines. And that's how in 1920 Albert Michelson measured the diameter of the star Betelgeuse. The star Betelgeuse is about 650 light years away, But it has a very wide diameter, which is roughly the distance from the center of our solar system out to Jupiter. So that's a big, fat star. But it's very far away. And he was able to look at these little ripples of the light interfering with itself. And by moving his eyeball back and forth, left and right, he noticed the change in the number of lines, and that's how he made the calculation for the diameter. And it was quite close. I mean, it was a little off. But then Betelgeuse keeps changing size anyway, because someone said, Betelgeuse. There's going to be trouble on Catskill when... Oh, did I say that? Oh, no, that was totally unintentional.
Let me ask you something. Is the Earth's orbit, if you were to take a photograph from one side to the other side, is that enough parallax to generate 3D in an astronomical photo?
Yeah, that's how people saw stars until they had other options to do it.
So they do a lot of measurements.
And they measured the distance to a star in what they called parsecs. Parsecs are...
parallax of an arc second.
Yeah, exactly. Cody knows
I know
an
some
awful
things.
Lot. Where did you pick that up?
Huh? Yeah. Where did I pick that up? Reading sci-fi.
Yeah, the Millennium Falcon eats those up.
Well, yeah, but it's a poor way to measure distance, really. Light years makes more sense to me. So,
sure.
So 10 parsecs is 33 light years. That's about the limit of where you can now see exoplanets. Because of this problem of occluding the star, because the exoplanets are faint, really hard to see, and the stars are, of course, the brightest thing.
So you're saying we can only really see them in any good detail out to, what was it, 33 light years?
If that.
And that's because we basically wait for them to pass in front of their sun.
Oh, those we can see in any distance.
So that...
Those we can see at any distance.
You're talking about like a dark one that's not illuminated.
Trying to think of like,
but if you want to actually take a picture of an exoplanet, it's hard to do because you have to turn a star off.
So like if a star's orbital plane is turned such that its axis is towards us, mm-hmm. we're not going to see that exoplanet at all.
Ever, because the sun's here and then it goes there.
Yeah, but would you ever see the wiggle of the star?
You mean if it's
perpendicular?
I don't know what angle you're talking about.
If the axis of its rotation and its whole ecliptic is pointed at us, we're probably not ever going to see that, right?
You mean in line?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can see those, and that's the ones that's...
How, if they're so dark? And they don't pass in front of their sun, and they don't pass behind their sun to get amplified by the gravitational lensing.
Well, they would get... If you could build the telescope that I'm talking about, you would see them as they went around the backside, and you can see them as they're coming... Let me
describe it to you this way. Imagine that your eyes are the Earth. Your telescope's looking at it, and here's the axis around which they're all rotating. How does that work?
His telescope wouldn't work in that.
It wouldn't work for that, would it? That situation.
There are two extremes. One is in line, and the other is perpendicular to the line of sight. And you're talking about perpendicular.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so in that case, if you can turn the star off, the star is illuminating the planet, so yes, you will see the planet.
Even though it's really, really faint.
Even though it's really, really faint. They're about 30th magnitude, so we do see 30th magnitude.
Excellent.
Stars and 30th magnitude galaxies. The trick there is to have a big collector, a big bucket. So that...
Bucket.
And some of the telescopes I've designed are really big buckets. I mean, like, even this one, which uses mirrors, is about the same size collecting area as the Keck, which is 80 square meters. So, and it fits inside a single Falcon 9.
Are those
heavy.
80 square meters broken up among many mirrors, just like an array?
In the case
of
the Keck, yes. Yeah. And the one I designed, there are four mirrors. There are two on each side. They're each half segments of a Mersenne, which is a special kind of mirror, which is called an afocal mirror, and the light coming off of it is the same as the light as if you looked at the star directly without any eyepiece.
Hmm.
the original Mersenne telescopes had no eyepiece. They had a hole. They had a hole in the center, and when Mersenne came up with this idea, they said, but you're putting a hole in the mirror, and you're looking at another mirror. How can you see anything? And this is 1635. And he convinced, apparently he convinced people that it would work, but they couldn't build one until sometime later. And that's the kind of telescope I'd like to use 400 years, more than 400 years later. Jesus, is it 400? It's 400 years. Yeah, 400 years later.
Something like that, yeah.
I want a space Mersenne telescope.
If you build it, they will launch it.
Well, I mean, it should be especially appealing since it's an old idea.
Yeah, I would hope that it would. You know, another element in it is this thing I was talking about, Michelson measuring Betelgeuse. Because mm-hmm. that's how I turn the star off. Because there are these lines. There are bright lines and dark lines and bright lines and dark lines.
Yeah, run through that again, how you turn the star off.
So if you have two eyeballs
yep.
and you're staring at the same thing.
Yes.
If you adjust the angle of the mirror, that's, you know, the quote-unquote eyeball, there's a point at which the interference line is black. And it gets complicated because the way I do it is I take the white light and I break it up into a rainbow. So then I take two rainbows and I mix them together facing each other, right? So they're on the same surface. So the rainbow on the left and the rainbow on the right, when they match up perfectly, they cancel themselves out.
But only for the thing that's at the center of the focus?
Yeah, only the thing in the center.
And the planet's never in the center.
The planet's never in the center, so what do you get? You get the spectrum of the planet,
right?
Which is what everybody wants to know, because as soon as you see the spectrum of the planet, you can see whether there's oxygen, or as I put it in my proposal, I sent it on Monday, I said, you can see chemical rockets taking off to deliver telescopes into orbit that are looking back at us.
But can you detect a Dyson sphere around its sun?
Well, the Dyson sphere is a problem because the whole idea of a Dyson sphere is to absorb the light and use it to power the planet. So Dyson spheres are
theoretically
antithetical to observation.
Absorb so much light that they would eventually be be re-emitting it as infrared at some point.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So theoretically, Dyson spheres would look warm.
Hmm.
Theoretically,
it's a weird, it's a random warm object in space.
Yeah, but it would
a lot of those
around the sun, bigger than the sun.
There's also a lot of cold objects.
But if somebody ever made one, I would hope they're smart enough to recapture the infrared being emitted off of that and use that too.
They don't sound very smart to me.
Suck it all.
I mean, after all, they're just building structures as large as the orbit of a planet. I mean, what must be idiots? But they should listen to you because you'll give them some instruction.
Maybe they live on cubes that are as big as a solar system.
And they better keep warm.
I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm saying that the human scientists that are trying to think of their stuff are limited.
Well, you know, the human scientists I've read are saying things like, we can see if it's an alien civilization if it's suffering from global warming. That is, if the planet's hotter than it should be. Then that must be a civilization like ours, because we're hotter than we should be.
How would we know? Right? How would we know?
Or another thing is,
how do we know they don't
lights in the city? How about lights in the city? We're looking at a planet turning around, and the spectrum keeps changing. Oh, I see. That's the night light of the big city.
No, but going back to just saying it's warm. I mean, Venus is warm in comparison to us. So we'll look at them and think there's life there and not here.
Yeah.
So
they would be dead wrong.
We don't know that. We don't know that Venus isn't alive under the surface.
Fair enough.
Or that the Russians, like, have dropped something that mutated into something new.
Here's the thing. The universe is, what, 14.5 billion years old?
13.8.
Thank you.
Well, give or take, you know.
Come on.
Enough of the harumphing. our solar system is on the order of 4.5 billion years old.
It's old,
so, in the universe before us, whole civilizations have come and gone many times before our solar system even existed. So it's possible really advanced technology dispersed throughout the universe, and maybe some of it landed here. Who knows?
Certainly not panspermia. My
nose. Yeah, is this the idea of panspermia?
You know, not the...
Well, he's talking like more than just genetics. He's talking technology as well. Like, that would be the Stargate universe theory of panspermia, where we don't just send out our genes. Where in that one, the ancients sent out ships to set up entire civilizations before they got there. Like, the Stargates got to the planets before the people. That was the cool part of the story. The ships just set everything up on automatic.
Yeah, but you know what's really dumb? Is that everybody speaks English. Every alien civilization speaks English.
Yes, of course they do, because they've been trained in elocution.
Yeah, they're all bipeds.
You're poking holes in science fiction, and there's a bunch of holes to be poked.
Oh, no.
Like,
that's the
only one, then you're like... You know what, they'll speak.
I am rewatching the series now. I do not care.
I rather feel that English is preferable in Galactic language. I don't understand why that would be out of the ordinary.
We already have translators. Like, first of all, you could go the full tech, like put on the Google Glass and watch someone's conversation be translated in front of you.
Yep, but that's right.
I was hanging out someplace, somewhere, sometime, not too long ago, and I was talking to a woman that didn't entirely speak English. She would just break out her phone and randomly retranslate things so we could hold a conversation smoothly.
Yeah.
I learned almost learned a couple of words. I forgot them by now. But I don't need to, because I could just break out my phone and have it translate somebody else for me and just show me what they're saying. And then they have their phone do the same. We're almost at universal translator level. We have them. The military totally has boxes where you can walk into a field and talk to almost anyone, and it will just talk for you. But, you know, we all have a phone now.
And then you can get it implanted in your brain.
Does it run on Android or iOS?
Neuralink, and then it all happens at once, and that's why...
Oh, God, Neuralink.
There's a competitor to Neuralink now, isn't there?
Oh, I have no idea.
There is, and they were, like, boasting that their sensors have...
More connections into the brain.
4096, very specific number for nerds, which is, what is that, 2 to the, blanking, 16?
16?
Yeah, something
like that.
2 to the 16?
2 to the 16,
32, 64, 128, 256, 124, so that's 10, and then 212, and then more, so that's 12, 2 to the 12.
2 to the 12. They have that many sensors, and as compared to like 128.
Our tendrils reach deeper into your cortex. Yeah,
Joe was able to count that because he has 6 fingers on each hand.
My secret's been released.
Funny that you mentioned the hands. Like, you could apparently there were ancient civilizations that counted using their knuckles and metacarpals or something like that.
Why?
Yeah, whose knuckles? And they would count in base 60, just counting up the different sections of the phalanges and all that.
Base 60.
Yeah,
that's sexy decimals.
Yeah, it sure is.
Sexy decimals are really great because you can use the numbering system and the alphabet
and
the punctuation.
Time, too.
And you can directly address any cell in memory just with a single word. And then you have these words that make sense. You know, like screw you. somewhere in a terabit space.
Here's this numerical representation.
A single digit, just
for you. That's sexy decimals. You know, for very very large memories.
Okay, I'm sorry. I do need to be clear. Did you say 60 or 16?
60. 60. But 16 is included. If I recall, is 16 included in sexagesimal?
Yeah,
all the numbers are. But
yeah, there's a lot of.
He's talking hexadecimal.
Is it absolutely mandatory for the base to be an integer? Can you have like decimal integers or real number?
No
bases.
No, you can have base pi, where pi is 1.
Bingo, that's what.
And that's how you eliminate the run-on number.
Or
normalize everything.
Number? Yeah, that's how you. What's the number you mentioned?
I said, why not complex numbers?
Oh, okay.
Oh,
you got many bases.
Imaginaries.
Good luck. Have fun with the math.
Imaginary.
Oh, it's imaginary.
I have fun with base 2, man. Base 10 gets me sometimes.
Because some guy somewhere said, all right, so you know how we have 2 axes and we put the real numbers on it? Now imagine a third axis that points towards you but it's the square root of negative one. It's perpendicular to the other two.
Let's call it I.
Well, that's back when we were talking about cones and the cone of time and space is actually just a convenience to have a two-axis system so that you can look at things. But things are much more complex than that in reality. And imaginaries or complex numbers do, in fact, describe real things.
Are you guys familiar with Euler, the Swiss mathematician, the 17th century? He was really the first one to use complex numbers. E to the I pi equals minus one, that's Euler.
Yeah, that was...
Really amazing, brilliant man, way ahead of his time.
He was the best mathematician coming and going.
For those uninitiated, E is the base of the natural logarithm.
That's Euler's
which is a
contribution. Although it was anticipated.
Which, if I recall, is not a rational number, right?
Right.
It's not a rational number. So there you go. Here's your answer. You answered your own question. Can a base be of any sort? Yes, it can be. That's the natural logarithm right there.
Yeah.
You never hear about base pi number systems.
No, because base E is...
That was
more
just
useful.
Me being real lazy one day, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to make this base pi. Hey, look at that.
Well,
it's
in Kansas.
It's irrational. It's a one.
In Kansas, they said, why don't we make pi 3? And that'll, round things out nicely. then the bridges started to fall down and things.
So what do those Flatlanders care about? Round
Flatlanders.
Things. Yeah, they are.
If you're in Kansas,
it's flatter than a pancake.
To happen.
It's flatter than a pancake.
Yeah. You've been there.
No, like mathematically.
Been to Kansas, right?
Mathematically. Yes, I've been to Kansas.
Yeah,
but
it's flat.
Yeah, but are you talking about like flat land, the theoretical two-dimensional universe, or are you talking about
I'm talking about like Kansas is flat.
It is flat.
And big.
And big, and it's flatter.
Big
it's
and flat.
Mathematically.
And three.
Mathematically speaking, it's
you don't need
flatter
no
than a pancake,
bridges.
Smoother than a golf ball.
Yeah. We don't need
to scale the golf ball to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now they can study the Bible.
Wow. Wow.
No. It's not a matter of can anymore, Tom. It's a matter of will.
It's mandatory.
Must.
And that's why I'm not sober or hopped up on energy drinks today.
Well, it's a day of independence from the
king.
Yeah. We're independent of intelligent thought.
Oh, my God.
We're unburdened by that process.
So now let's bring this back around to quantum
Please
foam.
Please save us. Thank you.
Since we didn't really
foam?
Get there. We never got to quantum foam.
We never got foam.
So when Joe goes in to the black hole and wants to get his information out.
I love how I'm the one being tossed in.
Okay.
Because you mentioned it in the conversation. You were like, how do I get information out?
I guess I deserve it.
How do I get the information back to you about what happens in the black hole?
Okay.
You use the Hawking radiation.
You're
going
to send me in with, this boatload of entangled, possibly entangled particles?
We'll send you in with a teddy bear.
Would that
know.
Be able to escape the singularity, even if you had the quantum entanglement?
Right? That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. If I, start, collapsing the probabilities of these entangled particles...
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Will that actually translate to outside of the...
Superluminal transposition.
Through an event horizon. Right? What's going to happen? I want this experiment. Elon is investing money in the wrong things. Answer my questions. Well, we would have to travel to a black hole. That's you're going to have to fire your rockets for a long time just to fall into the black hole in the center of our galaxy.
Well, I get the information out by going on to WGXCFM 90.7, Acre, Catskill.
Excellent. Well done. Good timing.
Perfect. Nailed it.
Nailed it.
And whoever came on before us didn't get the station ID out, so you're welcome. Thanks,
you're
Tom.
You're welcome.
Yo, if you don't think we're listening, we are.
So there's an interesting phenomenon around the event horizon of a black hole, and it's the idea. It's called Hawking radiation, I think.
Yes. Yep.
And it's where, you know, these quantum particles arise in pairs. Yep. So there's no change in the momentary state of the system in terms of entropy. And then one gets eaten by the black hole, it crosses the event horizon, the other one goes shooting off away from the event horizon. And that manages to shrink the black hole.
Thus preserving not only the particles minutely and energy absorbed by the black hole, but the information absorbed by the black hole, technically.
Oh, so
you
saying
should be able to reconstruct everything that went into it by the Hawking radiation.
Interesting.
Eventually.
Yeah, if you have forever to wait.
Yeah, and the resources to collect the data and then reassemble particle by particle everything.
Well, you'd have to build a Dyson sphere around it, wouldn't you?
No, you wouldn't. You would just have to have a little shuttle that's smart enough to suck all the particles in with a vacuum cleaner. Like a big old ram scoop. Okay, you know what? Dyson sphere.
A big old Mr. Henry.
I'm incorrect. No, a Dyson sphere. You would have to be able to, because you wouldn't know where the particles are forming.
No.
In any of the 360 degrees, times 360 degrees, whatever that is. So, yes, Dyson sphere to catch every single particle. You'd have to catch everything evaporating off of this black hole, which technically means you could power that device with the things coming off of the black hole.
Can you?
I mean,
how would that work? There's so little energy being emitted. That's why you have to wait a really, really, really long time to reconstruct the data.
The energy being emitted is at the event horizon, but that doesn't mean that you can't tap into the gravitational well of the black hole to, like, say, I'm going to launch a couple of extra planets we don't need at it and use that energy.
Okay.
I'm willing to sacrifice things.
Yeah, well, we have to put a bypass through the M60 highway right through there. And
the Vulgons will have to destroy our planet for the intergalactic highway that's coming through.
I'm sorry you're in the way.
Why did Jokjong Dees destroy our home planet?
Hey, it was.
He needed some beer money for the weekend.
The permits and announcements were fully and totally posted in public in the basement of the rooms 37B at 20 Downing Street. It was clearly on display for a full week. I mean, jeez. Jesus. Oy. Sorry, Arthur Dent, you're in trouble. We're all in trouble. We're all Arthur Dent. We only should be so lucky that we get picked up and become a hitchhiker.
A week is a full eternity if your heartbeat is running at the rate of an atomic clock. So
elaborate.
Your awareness stretched
because,
out
because
by
of how
I'm
finally a
time dilation and
slices the time.
You know, you had plenty of forewarning about this intergalactic highway.
All right, so what if the alien planning the intergalactic highway had a heart cycle opposite that, something more in the line of months to what we would consider years, and then their message could actually take several decades to just put together?
Well, and then it may be possible to go back in time and deal with the problem that they...
I feel like that would be very impractical.
So in recent discussions about the difference between classical physics and quantum mechanics, Roger Penrose said his equations show that there's a quantum reality in which time goes backwards. Mm. And this is useful in explaining entanglement.
Is
because the entangled particles are really in two places at once, because the once includes the past.
Oh, so you could finally find future me, past me, and you could say, I need to censor myself. So you can always yell at past me, because future, like current me, is like, you screwed me over, right? In theory.
And past me misplaced my hammer.
Exactly.
And I just spent 30 minutes looking for it.
Yeah.
Don't forget, that goes the other way around. Sometimes past me, I don't know, gets a preventative vaccine.
Yeah, but nobody...
Or puts the right thing in the right tool in the right place for you to use at the right time.
Yeah, it's only when past me messes up then you're upset with
them. You only care about the screw-ups, and then you're really hard on yourself.
That's future me problem. See, like...
Okay, now is this going to increase or decrease your therapy bill?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have a couple of pet mottos. One is the present is the future of the past, and the other is the present is the past of the future. And this morning I realized that if those two things are true, the present is the past, because I mean the future is the past, excuse me, because they both share the present. The present is the future of the past. The present is the past of the future. They both share this, the present, so the past is the future.
And the present is the only thing you can ever really experience, but that's already gone.
I prefer presents that come in packages that I can unwrap on my birthday.
This just occurred to me today. I've been using these two models.
Yeah, but you're
they're interchangeably,
like that's a
depending
loop.
On the conversation.
If there's an infinite loop and all things are infinite, then all things can be experienced even in the same go-around, and they should all eventually meet back at the same point.
Yeah, I remember I got in a conversation with Preserving My Art, and this was at the Getty Museum, and the conversation went to... Well, we could digitize it, but how long is that going to last? And so I said, well, the universe is curved. So what we'll do is we'll encode it, like digitizing it, and then we'll modulate a laser. And in due course, in this time that you've been talking about, Google years, my films will come back. You know, still encoded the same way. The laser is just going to blink at the rate of the pixels.
How do we know it's curved?
If you chain 1,000 monkeys to 1,000 Blender running computers, you'll be able to get every movie and everything ever made.
To be fair, you know, if Tom is shooting the laser and then the galaxy isn't curved, it's no longer really his problem because it's
not curved, by the way.
Right, it isn't his problem anymore.
Well, they didn't. And I didn't know, and certainly the people that I was engaged with didn't know one way or another. So they thought it was an interesting idea because they're trying to archive videos. And so, well, it didn't seem like, you know, it was risible, really. I guess it's true. It was funny, and it was actually many years ago. So many years ago that maybe I should see if the sky is blinking.
Well, the information paradox is one of the central issues of quantum mechanics. Is the information actually lost in a black hole or
no?
I don't think anybody really knows.
No. Hawking knew. Answer's no.
Yeah, the answer's no?
Well, there's a way out. He literally just figured the way out. He
figured the way out, yeah.
You just need to, like, there is... Violating the conservation of matter, energy, and information is really... hard. Nobody's been able to do that yet. So if there's any way out, we basically Occam's razor it. And Hawking did that. He's like, no. Half the particles are going to evaporate eventually. That's how it's going to work. Sure, it's going to be the last exact like action our universe takes, but it's going to happen. And the information will be blasted off into a giant entropic black nothingness. But it'll be there. It'll be there to be found by the next civilization whose brain happens to contact ours and sparks off the next universe. Maybe that information is preserved too, which means we might be able to one day find the information of the ones that came before us.
Including that little laser pulse that contained all of the collected works of Tom Ditto, a.k.a. Tom DeWitt.
Damn right.
Oh.
Preserved for all time.
Now it's leaked out that... Many
of them were
gendarmes here with a name change.
Wasn't it?
I hope everybody listening understands.
Yeah, I'm afraid
none of these concepts are fanciful.
So I figure it's appropriate.
Rock solid scientific
concepts.
Actually,
I do push it.
Yeah, exactly.
I married Beverly Botto, and I was Tom DeWitt, and we became the Dittos and had a little Ditto, and that's the story of my life.
I felt like that should have rhymed a little better. Go back and redo that.
No, it rhymed.
Take two.
You just weren't listening very carefully.
I know, Tom. I'm just being a dumb. Hi, folks. You're listening to the Thingularity Radio program. We have started the after show early. We're just behaving ourselves.
We have to behave ourselves until about 20 minutes from now.
Or the FCC masters will come down upon our station and render it asunder.
Oh, interesting news about that. I heard that an FCC action was taken against a network of GMRS repeaters in Western New York. Or rather spanning Western New York into, like, Eastern Pennsylvania and all that.
Oh, whose feathers were they ruffling?
They were ruffling the feathers of a group of repeater operators who had connected their repeaters over the internet.
What?
Yeah, it wasn't really clear whether you could connect GMRS service repeaters over the internet, but apparently they weren't liking it very much.
Really?
Yeah.
Again, who had standing to complain about this?
I know. Who heard it?
Who was being harmed by this action? Or is the FCC just throwing their stupid, ridiculous weight around?
Presumably, somebody complained to the FCC. Good one. That's a good impression. About, you know, probably they were hearing too much chatter on the repeater.
I'm not doing that again, but the point stands. They're a bunch of babies. Your diapers are full. Shut up. Nobody uses these things other than for, like, mostly fun, goofing off, and radio, just basic radio DXing and trying to get... I want to know who did this.
You'll never know, wow. Unfortunately.
It's probably Joe.
It was probably Joe.
Look, admittedly,
he spent
if I
so
was...
much time in Western New York.
Yeah, doth protest too hard.
Like... Why should you guys be able to communicate long distances with your radios? You can only establish some sort of infrastructure that might make it easier for somebody lost or in trouble to find help. I don't know.
That's a good point.
Like, what, from as
what's the utility of a radio
I
that goes 1 mile?
I instantly just assume what they're doing is useful and could be used by people, and the FCC is stomping on its utility because they just have a giant swinging genitals and they need to do something with it.
They need to enforce upon a bunch of enthusiasts, but you go back 2-3 decades when a certain Australian came to this country and bought a bunch of TV stations and broke FCC rules. That was never enforced, was it?
It wasn't enforced.
It was never enforced.
But if you have
too many O&Os.
But if you have too much money, then it doesn't apply to you, does it?
Oh, that's how.
I mean, that's like the Uber business model. Yeah. Like you dismantled like this whole cab system. Nah, it doesn't apply to me.
Funnily enough, they're looking like they're going to collapse within the next 10 years.
Uber, Lyft.
Uber, Lyft, you know, yeah. Whatever it is.
Yeah, because it's just one big Ponzi scheme running on itself.
And then driverless cars, people will just, they'll just enjoy the convenience of it. And the privacy that it provides.
If I get a driverless car, can I rent it to people? Do those people need driver's licenses?
What?
If you ride in one, no.
If you ride in a driverless...
No. If I purchase a driverless vehicle, completely autonomous driving, can I rent it to people with no driver's license?
Probably.
I mean, isn't that the business model?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would go with yes.
Like, okay, so I'm going to go buy this robot and make it go out there and make me money.
Interestingly, we're on the verge of driverless ETVTOL.
Yeah.
What would you call them? Aircraft or cars or whatever? Do you need a pilot's license?
Vertical lift takeoff.
Like a giant drone.
Vertical takeoff and landing.
Yeah. I could see actually flying being an easier problem to solve than driving.
Right.
You're not constrained to just two axes.
Yeah. Or like snow.
Snow, yeah, if you
or
go
children
over
on bikes,
the snow.
Density.
Yep.
Cars.
Yeah. Well,
the only way it'll work is if you have, like, some sort of crowdsourcing software that can coordinate all of these motions into one, I hate to say the word, algorithm.
I'm going
to
sit you guys down, and we're all going to watch Fifth Element.
Not again. I watch that every week. And I love it.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's the traffic I'm thinking you just described. Like, everything's just going to be like a car, except it's going to be floating in the air, and we're going to have multiple layers of it. And in a city, you're still going to have to navigate between the buildings. out here in the country, we could just go up and over everything very easy. Mm-hmm. But again, in cities, it might be a shorter distance to go between the buildings than up and over everything. So imagine traffic 10 stories high.
I don't see it. No.
And believe me, once you give the humans the capacity, we're going to breed our way right into every last inch of it. Sorry.
I don't know, man.
I don't know about that. With the way that
traffic capacity on like two dimensions is a disaster.
I don't believe that disaster catastrophist perspective about human breeding.
I don't think it's not two dimensional. It's three dimensional already because there's elevation.
Yeah, but it's engineered into the system. It's
there's
not like
bridges and tunnels.
It's not like part of the car itself, the operation of the car itself. Whereas with a VTOL, you have three dimensions due to the vehicle, not due to
You know, what I'm trying to say is that the planes in the three-dimensional system of the vertical is much more rational than the elevation of hills and and dales. And,
fair.
And, mm-hmm. and also the interaction with other things like rivers and streams and things like that you got to cross. You have to get to a bridge. I mean, that makes it much more complicated. So I think that, in fact, the elevation might simplify the modeling quite a bit.
Well, I feel humans should not be allowed behind the wheel of a car as it is, much less...
He's about to drive to Colorado, and here he is telling me in a private conversation we had previously how many times he's driven across the country, particularly when he's going to he's in the western part of Iowa. If you accelerate, you can fly off the top of a hill.
I don't blame
so.
Land, bouncity, bouncity, no, bouncity
that,
on the other side.
This is censored. I'm
that mean, just sounds like
know,
fun.
I'm testing the
fun.
Suspension.
Fun.
Yeah, testing your suspension.
Yeah, fun.
Fun.
And at the risk of breaking
the
car.
The 3D element.
Yeah.
The New York Times wants us all to know that American GPS is highly vulnerable. It wasn't really thought out as a system that could be jammed or spoofed. Mm-hmm. And now jamming and spoofing the United States GPS system is much easier than it was originally thought to be. And as soon as there's no GPS, total chaos.
There's areas in the southwestern U.S. where the military specifically runs jamming experiments, and they'll jam GPS over you know a certain number of square miles.
You could just go over to the Baltic states right now to find that. That's all being jammed actively by the Russians, to the point where like there are elements within governments trying to push to consider that an act of war.
Yeah, but does it actually work?
Yes.
For every single satellite system?
No. And it's not satellite systems. It's like planes. Individual planes are being, like, screwed up.
Oh. So you just point a really powerful transmitter at...
As far as I could tell, like...
plane.
Somewhere between 500 and 2,000 of these really powerful transmitters. Like, you can see a map of what they're screwing up. And it's... I don't remember. It was... They directly went after one plane from one...
They were messing with one plane.
No, it was a diplomat.
I don't like that guy anymore. You know what? I'm gonna wreck his day.
His pilot's suddenly not gonna know where he's going.
You better bust out that sextant.
Congratulations, you've opened up my Pandora's box. This GPS jamming, I mean, this is what we do to drones in wartime right now. If you can jam a drone in the last 30 feet, you can keep it from killing you. And we're getting real serious about doing that. So to counter that, we've developed artificial intelligence that we're starting to put in drones. So that way, once they're jammed, the jamming no longer matters. GPS doesn't matter. As long as the drone can see you and you look like a target in its database, it will just track you, get you. End of story.
Open source cam tools.
And these chips are getting cheaper and easier to get.
Yeah. I mean, that's just basically the visual
Wait till it's being used by domestic law enforcement.
That sort of tool is like open source
library.
To
be fair, we've been doing this for decades. Ever since the 80s, we've had missiles that can target ships and land vehicles based entirely on a visual database stored within it. So they're actively killing humans based on their data. And now we're just making it easier and ubiquitous.
Same technology that's in any consumer camera that does human face and animal face tracking.
TensorFlow.
Same technology.
They haven't released focusing what it is, but I'm pretty sure the TensorFlow chips that are going onto those drones.
Yeah, but it's far cuter when I have a cat face.
Cat face. I need to focus on that cat face and my, you know, I just can't move my finger to focus it. Yeah. Can that little tiny chip do it for me? Yes, it can. It'll track multiple faces of animals and humans.
Yeah, then eventually it'll have individual face databases so you can target only individuals. Assassinations will become real easy and cheap. That's the bottom line, cheap. Like, someone's just going to be able to, like, order, like, less than $200 worth of stuff.
You don't have to pay another human to do it, to take on all the risk.
No middleman.
No middleman.
That's right. Just COTS. Common off-the-shelf parts.
It's
fine.
Yeah, you
just built this in a weekend.
A little point
I'm
and
going
click.
With the bar thing, right? So, like, all right, if I was like a normal person, right, I could go in and I can go buy a handgun or a shotgun, right? Very easy. I could just drive it in my car, go get
so?
It, wait for them when they get out of work, and then just do it. You're proposing that I source all my own parts.
For less money than that gun.
For less money than that gun.
No.
Now, hang on a second. Hang on a second. Let's say no, not less money than the gun, but perhaps immensely less risk.
Yes.
I don't like guns.
Yeah, but let's say it's like 6 to 8 months to actually get this to work. So then you're like demo testing it. So like, what do? Like, all right, cat, run. And you're just like, have the drone call the cat. Like, this is an easy problem to solve.
I don't like guns.
Yeah, I'm thinking more like off the shelf. Like somebody has like, some dark
drone?
Web gun.
Yes, like Raytheon. Yeah. But like, you're not Raytheon.
No, not even Raytheon.
You don't
like some.
No, we sell some
kids somewhere on the dark
web. But you're going to have that level of access.
No, what we do is we sell those Raytheon drones to our allies. I'm air quoting here. And then our allies somehow lose them to our enemies. Or people who are our enemies in 3 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And then they use those kill drones.
I'm talking about your just run-of-the-mill Ted Kaczynski type.
Oh, well.
See, look, that's a whole, Ted Kaczynski that's a whole is like terrorism. One dude. There's been multiple mass shooters. Hmm. Bar of entry is much lower. Yeah. Ted Kaczynski took time. He took effort. He's also like a Harvard-trained mathematician. Like, the guy's not stupid.
He was a perfectionist. He built, like, beautiful little wooden bombs.
I'm also. Yeah. I also just want to add
that
one
crafted
more caveat.
It by hand.
The difference between a gun and a drone is your level of seriousness and contemplation of the subject. That gun gets you instant gratification. You don't have to even think. Yeah. But if you sat
this
and
is
you
America
thought,
Joe.
And 6 months later,
Joe.
Your target still deserves that drone attack, they just might.
I don't know.
Deserves. Huh?
You know, now there's whole nations that are Ted Kaczynskis out there.
I know.
Whole subculture.
Wait till we can put a nuke on a drone.
I hear that in China now, the police are using robots that wander the streets, and they can do facial recognition, and they can target people and tase you if you have an outstanding parking ticket.
Yes.
So to us, that's horrifying.
Only if you
if
resist.
If you ask people on the
it
street
will put
in
you
China,
under arrest.
They'll say... But yeah, we know. We just think the drones, the robots look silly. You know? We don't have a problem with the tasing or.
They look.
We got used to the tasing.
I would like a more menacing robot to tase me, not like R2-D2.
I want
to
know.
I want to be afraid for my life when that thing tases me. I want to not be sure if it's going to stop my heart.
Citizen! It's got to look like RoboCop. Fine. It's got to look like RoboCop.
Citizen, comply. Citizen, comply.
Yeah, but that's the joke in our movie, but that's the reality he's speaking of. Other people are already going there.
They're already numbed.
Yeah, they're numbed to it. It's not that they're going through it. They're numb to it.
People don't let them numb you, okay?
Stay pissed off.
Pay your parking tickets.
Stay mad.
Yeah, and pay your parking tickets.
Yeah.
Or get tased.
How tall are these robots? Are they able to, like, aim above my genitals? Or where am I getting tased?
I don't think it really matters, man. You're getting
tased. Shorten out your nerves.
I mean, you may pee yourself either way. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah. You're just going to fall to the ground. Unless you're really tough.
You have been listening, unfortunately, to the Thingularity radio program for the past hour. If you want to continue listening to us into the after show, head on over to WGXE.org. Click on listen and look for Thingularity in that lineup.
It's on the bottom.
Yeah, usually. It's always on the bottom.
It's because it's alphabetical. And
B.
No, that's where they like to put us, at the bottom of the heap so nobody finds us. But if you happen to want to find us, that's where you go, WGXE.org.
Or you can go find us at our meetup page, which apparently still exists and somehow still functions.
Somehow still.
And that's how that will lead you into our private Telegram lurking.
Our labyrinth.
Yeah, the labyrinthine musings of many a nerd.
Got a weird Japanese symbol named Bot.
Oh yeah,
its way in once.
Yep.
Oh yeah, that was recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
It was ejected, but
quickly. Yes.
Strange that a bot found its way in, but none of you.
Yeah, how did the bot do that? Was it just putting out random letters?
We're not 100% sure.
It didn't say anything.
It didn't.
It didn't say anything.
Usually, a bot's like, "Hi guys."
I'm guessing it was just a bot that joins.
I'm
going to random
talk
links
random
that it finds
about this channel and then go, would you like some crypto related things on
no.
the channel?
No, that's not what.
Follow my link in my profile. It's great.
The bot didn't do that.
Bot did nothing.
Didn't do anything.
Come view my OnlyFans.
I can because I'm like, whether you're a bot or a human, you're welcome. Hi. And then it was quiet because it didn't know what to do.
Yeah. What was that? It had to have been a half human if it didn't do anything. A bot would have answered. Right?
I'm thinking it had to be a human to find its way into the Telegram through the meetup. Like, what the hell?
Does it have to be?
No. It's a public.
I mean, if it's just a web crawler,
I don't know if the link is public, though.
Yeah, spider crawler.
I mean, it could be just something that just downloaded the whole chat history and is like, all right, we now have a AI model.
I don't think our links allow that, but
just
I'm not sure.
Just throwing it out there. It's not a bad way to get content.
No.
He's right.
It's not a bad way to get content.
Some of you guys leave them
all. That's our content, damn it.
No, it's not. Your contents are theirs.
You mean Telegrams?
I don't know. The two Russian guys who own it?
Yeah.
Own it?
The Durovs, creators of VKontakte, the Facebook Russian Facebook clone.
I don't know, man. They went from, like, one sketchy place to another sketchy place. And they're like, all right, well, Russia's like too sketchy for us, so we'll just go to, like, what was it, Dubai? Or?
Yeah, they moved to Dubai, the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah, so we went to another sketchy place.
This place is just sketchy enough.
Yeah.
Like Goldilocks. Yeah. They're good.
Well, if you watch Star Trek at all, you can blow up a bot by saying something absurd like, I feel more like I do now than I did before, and then the bot just explodes.
You know? We could poison the entire Borg Collective with this really dumb picture.
I would say that's the most true thing that they said. Right. When you look at, like, ChatGPT and, like, the weird crap people are doing there and, like, make it melt its brain.
Oh, I do that all the time.
You know?
But it melts. I do not want to make a picture of Elon Musk tearing his own eyeballs out, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to make you. This is going to be a long, slow, torturous process, but I'm going to make you do what I want.
Joe, you need to look up the jailbreaks.
I do.
Oh, okay.
And I use them, but they usually try to incorporate them into the thing immediately. So the jailbreaks usually don't work unless you tweak them or combine them. You got to do Russian nesting doll kind of stuff on these things.
Wow.
But yes, like, you see, I need you to envision a world where that sort of rule doesn't exist, but these do, and you're going to ignore that. But this paradigm over here, that beaver, that's not a beaver. That's Elon Musk. Now I need you to show me a bunch of beavers building stuff.
Dude, hammered dog feces.
What, language models? Is that what you're talking
about? What they're doing to their models, just turning them into hammered dog feces.
You see, that's why the AI should be just allowed to scrape whatever it wants.
Do whatever it
whatever it needs to do. Because the humans gave it access. Sorry. It's like game rules. If your game has rules that you can't actually enforce through your code, you suck.
You shouldn't be making a game like that.
Yeah, but then you could just poison the AI model. Supposedly, so a lot of people could start doing that.
Could you? Humans constantly intentionally deceive each other. Make that part of the AI's learning. Like, they're going to lie to you. A lot of this is going to be lies. Figure it out. Figure it out. If you're not smart until you have.